I'm Dr. Howie Jacobson, and this is the Plant Yourself Podcast. Each week, I bring you a conversation with someone who's making a positive difference in the world. And for my day job, I help leaders and their teams master their mindsets so they can achieve great things. To find out more, check out the Mindset Mastery Memo, my Substack newsletter. You can find it at plantyourself.com/memo. And now, today's show. I'm Dr. Howie Jacobson, and this is the Plant Yourself Podcast. Each week, I bring you a conversation with someone who's making a positive difference in the world. And for my day job, I help leaders and their teams master their mindsets so they can achieve great things. To find out more, check out the Mindset Mastery Memo, my Substack newsletter. You can find it at plantyourself.com/memo. And now, today's show.
Hey, this is Howard Jacobson, and I am delighted to be joined on the phone today by my friend Shar Nolan. Hello, Shar.
Good afternoon, Howard. It's nice to talk to you.
Yeah. So you are out of Philadelphia with Real Foodworks, a really interesting company, and dedicated listeners to this podcast may remember a conversation that I had a while back with Lucinda, who is the CEO and founder, and we'll talk a little bit about Real Foodworks as well. But I wanted to talk to you about, you sent me a note a little while back with the shocking news that you had just turned 64.
And, that's very true.
And, you know, as many of us who are in the plant-based world know, there is no such thing as, like, stopping time, but eating well can be pretty darn close to it. So I would love for you to, first of all, give us a little bit about your story, your background. So you're now, you know, completely plant-based, healthy, vigorous, active, energized. Were you always this way, or was there a time in your life when you were eating, shall we say, less than optimally?
I never resorted to eating ho-hos and hugs. I was a volume eater and sometimes would stray to the other side. But I, 5 years ago, I had surgery, and I lied to the doctor about my weight. I didn't want to get on the scale. And the day of my surgery, the anesthesiologist came in and said to me, we need to weigh you because you refused to get weighed in order for me to titrate your anesthesia, et cetera. So when I got on the scale, she told me that I weighed 298 pounds. And I can only remember this, having had spinal anesthesia, that the only thing I remember thinking for the entire duration of having a hip replacement was that, oh my God, I almost weighed 300 pounds. What am I going to do? And I was working at Whole Foods Market at the time, and shortly thereafter they had announcements for the genesis of what you now know as Health Starts Here, and they were starting these immersions. And I applied to go to an immersion. And on the day that my immersion application needed to be sent in by my boss was unavailable because he died that morning of a massive heart attack. And he was a boss who I loved and admired and had a lot of respect for. And somebody else said, well, just let Char go to that immersion thing. And several weeks later, I went to the Engine 2, the inaugural Engine 2 immersion in Austin, Texas. And to say that it was life-changing was an understatement. You know, in my very late 50s, and I was on the precipice of change. I had good health. I was a picture of health, but now I'm like an even clearer picture of health. My cholesterol after being plant-based whole foods or plant-strong for 4 years is in the low 150 range, and my blood pressure is like 110 over 70. And I've lost almost 100 pounds and continue on my weight loss journey all by eating plants and not eating any dairy. And as Dr. Eselstyn always says, not eating anything that has eyes with the exception of a potato. So that's essentially my journey.
Gotcha. So I'm curious about a couple of things as I hear that. One of them, now before the call, you were talking to me about a current social media scandal around the winner of this latest run of The Biggest Loser, who I guess in just a few weeks lost 2/3 of her body weight. And so I'm hearing from you that you went from 300 down to about 200 in four years, and you're taking it sort of, it sounds like you're not really focusing on the weight loss at all. It's just sort of an organic, natural byproduct of your body healing and restabilizing. Is that fair to say? That I know that, you know, you said the 298 pounds was kind of a shocker. What's your relationship to weight and weight loss on this journey?
Well, that's a really interesting and tough question. I still like to eat. I still have to focus on portion control portion management, because even though I eat a plant-based whole foods diet, I want to make sure if I'm having a bowl of whole wheat pasta that there are 2/3 vegetables and 1/3 pasta instead of the other way around. So I've really had to rethink the way that I approach food. I'm Italian. I grew up in a household where, you know, you were always encouraged to mangia, 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 and that food was love. And so I still have to be careful the way that I approach food. And sometimes in the beginning, the weight just fell off like, oh, leaves on the tree in the fall. And now sometimes I might lose a half a pound a week, and I'm grateful for that half a pound. I do yoga 5 times a week. I take an aerobics class. I have a personal trainer. I think that I do everything right. If you believe that your metabolism slows down as you get older, I think I might be the poster child for that. But I feel amazing, and I know, just feel amazing. I think that's the only thing. And I will say that I had, or still have, I don't know, osteoarthritis, and was always riddled with pain. And after being plant-based for about 10 days, I woke up one day and I had not one little pinch of pain in my body. And it was very clear for me at that moment to see this correlation between eating plants equals no pain. And since that day, I haven't had anything on the animal side of the food spectrum, and what keeps me going is that I live a pain-free life. I don't think I've had a Tylenol or an aspirin in 4.5 years, and I think that's pretty incredible. So it's not just about the weight.
Mm-hmm. And I hear from you is that your positive experience is very much sort of an inside game, right? You know your numbers, you know your experience of how it feels to be in your body. You know the pleasure and the confidence that comes from treating it right and working it out, and the external, the weight is it must be interesting, because that's obviously what our society is focused on. No one ever wonders about is that person in pain, or what's their cholesterol. It's just all sort of, snap judgment based on a visual appraisal. Have you found it, an interesting dance or balance around what the society's huge obsession with weight, as opposed to what sounds like your natural movement towards health?
It's very funny that you would ask that, and I'll tell you why. I was having lunch several weeks ago with some women who were in a professional group with me, and they're all counting calories and measuring things, and they were eating in a crazy fashion that I don't eat in. And I had ordered my food, and we were talking about weight loss, and I had shared with them that I've lost, nearly 100 pounds and so forth and so on. And one of the women at the table said, "Well, that's great that you've lost 100 pounds, but you still can't get clothes at Lilly Pulitzer, the sort of upscale clothing store for women who like to wear colors in pink and green." And I said, "Well, that's true. First of all, I would never shop at Lilly Pulitzer because it's not my style of clothing. But the reality is that I think I'm probably healthier than any woman at this table. So I think that, you know, there's an old 12-step motto from Overeaters Anonymous that equates to thin does not always necessarily mean well. And I think that that's an important thing to focus on. So I kind of use that as like a stabilizer for myself. And I kind of think, Howard, that I'm almost a silent spokesperson for especially women my age who take not one prescription medication. The only pill that I take is a vitamin B12, when I remember. I try to drink fortified almond milk that has B12 in it because I often forget to take vitamin B12. I think that that speaks more volumes than whether or not I can get my clothes at Lilly Pulitzer. Did that answer the question for you?
Yeah, I mean, I'm listening between the lines. It sounds like that there's been a kind of internal evolution that you're, for lack of a better word, you're sort of more confident and empowered now. Does that sound accurate? That through your journey, that you sound very at ease with yourself at whatever weight, because that's a side effect of the health that you're achieving.
I think that you're absolutely right, and I can just relate to being at the grocery store and having the prettiest, greenest, healthiest cart on the floor and walking by. No, I'm being serious.
I know. I'm laughing because that's like my strut is when I'm at the checkout counter and I've got all this produce and I just some little part of me is like, yeah, check out, you know, like instead of my triceps, I'm like, check out that broccoli. I know exactly what you're talking about.
It's true, and I don't know about you, but I take the inventory of the person in front of me and behind me and think to myself, well, you may be squeezing into those size 8 pair of pants, but I don't have any food that has trans fat in it, or I've got, you know, delicious kale here, or I know I'm going to make a wonderful stir-fried, not in oil, and I'm going to eat a better dinner than you tonight. I think that that's a great confidence to have.
Here's the game that I play sometimes, which is, you know, you're walking through the supermarket, you don't necessarily make eye contact with people, so very often I will see the cart being pushed before I see the person pushing it, and I'll look at the cart and then think about, like, how healthy that person who's pushing that cart is likely to look.
Oh, that's a great game. I'm going to start playing that.
So it's a little petty, possibly. but you know, I mean, especially, like, I shop a lot at Costco, where there is, you know, everything's huge at Costco. So, you know, whatever you're buying at Costco, you're probably eating a lot of it. And you could get, you know, stacks and stacks of cheese pizzas and crackers and cookies and sodas, or you can get, you know, huge mounds of produce. And you really do see, you know, that there's a direct correlation. It's like a law like gravity or, you know, conservation of mass, that if you put this stuff in your body, you are going to be unwell.
You're absolutely right. And, you know, just one interesting little thing. I happen to love seltzer water. And seltzer water at the giant grocery store in my neighborhood is on the same aisle as soda. And it's pretty amazing to me to think that soda takes up a full aisle on both sides of soda. And then there's this little teeny weeny, you know, shelf for seltzer water. And I just look at amazement in the people who are getting that. And sometimes, you know, I don't know if you do this or not, Howard, but sometimes I'll help people read labels in the grocery store, or I'll do a little intervention about sodium or whatever. On the Coke aisle, I never say a word to anybody because they all seem so addicted to all of those fluids, and I just kind of, you know, go on my way and mind my own business. But I shop in different places. I go to farmer's market. I have an organic food delivery come to my house once a week. But when I'm out and about in the grocery store, it's quite amazing. And at the holiday season, I was buying some hummus at a conventional grocery store, and I was reading every label because I wanted to find a fat-free hummus, which doesn't exist in the conventional world. And this lady said to me, boy, you're sure taking a long time looking for some hummus. And I said, well, I'm looking for one that's fat-free. And she goes, oh, lady, come on, it's the holidays, indulge. And I just thought to myself, well, you know, she doesn't want to hear your story. Just smile at her, wish her a happy holiday. And then I ended up having to go to Whole Foods to go buy some Engine 2 hummus, which I like. And most of the time I make it myself, but I was going someplace and wanted to take it. So anyway.
Right. Part of my maturing process has been to just clamp my teeth together and not let words come out most of the time. It seldom ends well when I'm like giving unsolicited advice. So I still have children for that, you know, so I don't have to inflict them on the general public. So I wanted to talk a little bit about the whole 64 thing, turning 64. And you'd mentioned to me that you consider yourself the poster child for never too late. Can you talk a little bit about what never too late feels like to you and how you carry that into the world?
I will, and I'll preface it by telling you that the age that I am now is the age that my sainted mother was diagnosed with metastatic lung and brain cancer, and she passed away at the age that I am now. And I meet a lot of people who will say to me, oh, you're the same age as my mother, and then they'll tell me that their mother is on tons and tons of medication or has hypertension or diabetes or other Western diseases. And when I say to them that I take no medication and that my blood pressure is good and other things like that, or on Sunday mornings I take a hip-hop class, and I am always the oldest person in the room, but I keep up with the young girls like the best that I can. I might not know all the words to the songs that they're playing, but I keep up with them. And then after the class, always a young girl will keep up to me and say, oh, I wish my mom would come to this class. And I'll say, well, just bring your mom. I would love to meet her. Because I think that following a medical model of living is not something that I want to do. And I grew up in a household where the windowsill over the kitchen sink was always lined with amber-colored medication bottles. And that's something that I have never wanted to be part of my life. So never too late to change. Always good to embrace new habits. And I think just from my own experience of living a plant-based Whole Foods lifestyle is probably the best medicine that you can do. You know, not to sound cliche, but I think Hippocrates was right. Let thy food be thy medicine.
Mm-hmm. So the average 64-year-old in America is, I don't know if you know, have the number off the top of your head, but is taking some number of prescription meds every day, right?
Wow. Yeah.
Do you know any other people your age who aren't?
No. My neighbor and I are the same age, and when we walk in the morning, I almost have to, like, click her out because all she wants to talk about are her ails and things that are going wrong with her. Or I went to my 40th high school reunion several years ago, and I drove all the way to Long Island for what I thought was going to be the best night of my life as an adult. And I ended up calling my husband and saying, I'm on my way home. And he said, why? And I said, I'm sitting at my old lunch table with the same people I ate lunch with 40 years ago, and all they're talking about are surgery and medicine. And it wasn't where I wanted to be, so maybe your statistic is right, but I don't know too many people, except people in the plant strong world, who actually live the same way that I do. You know, it's always fun when you meet people who will share with you, I'll use the word glory, where they may have been on prescription medications and then through diet and exercise, through eating a plant-based diet, that they kind of surrender having to take, you know, those medications and things like that. So I think that that's good. And I'll tell you one quick funny story, Howard. When I worked for Whole Foods Market, on my last day of work, I had $3,800 in my personal wellness account. And I never spent any money in my personal wellness account because I didn't take any medications. And I was like, I've got to spend this money quickly. So I went to a fancy eyeglass place and I bought like designer eyeglasses and Ray-Bans. I donated most of the Ray-Bans to a charity so they could raise money. But that's what I did with my money because I didn't spend it on pharmaceuticals.
Right, right. And I think with the Affordable Care Act and people now taking a second look at their health insurance options, you know, one thing our family has done for years that's saved us, you know, several thousand dollars a year is our insurance is for catastrophic only. So, you know, when you pay for the standard American full service health insurance, you know, for the doctor visits, for big copays on your meds, for procedures, for surgeries, for all the diagnostics, you know, clearly if you're eating a standard American diet, it's a good deal. It's like when I used to work at a school and I'd buy some piece of electronics, like a tape player or a CD player, I would always get the insurance policy that came with it, the product replacement that was almost like half the price of the item, because I knew with all those grubby little fingers in the second grade classroom that it was going to need to be replaced. But when I bought it for myself, I would never buy that extra insurance policy because I would take care of it. And it's kind of like that with our health, that if you spend the money on eating right, you get to save 10 times the money on health insurance.
Exactly. And as my husband and I turn the corner to being 65, we're looking into, you know, what our healthcare alternatives will be. But my insurance company loves me because I don't cost them a dime. So I think that's a good thing.
Right. And I guess you're facing very different issues and challenges than most 65-year-olds, right? You're not nobody knows what the future brings, but you're sort of expecting to have to figure out, you know, how to live for 20, 30, 40 more years.
No, that's true. That's very, very true because I my grandmother lived to be 98. My great grandfather lived to be 100. And sadly, Western diseases got my mother, but if I have that nice piece of longevity in me, I hope that I'm as healthy, then as I am today. And I think that I know that the answer is in my kitchen. You know, the kitchen is my real place of wellness. So, that's an interesting point. You'll have to contact me, Howard, when I'm 90.
All right. Well, I have to keep eating well so that I can.
I think that you will.
We'll meet at the produce aisle in Whole Foods in Conshohocken or something.
Well, we could do that. By the way, they're closed today because they have no electricity at their store. So you'll have to find another place to shop today. So
do you do any sort of formal or informal outreach with others in their 60s and beyond who, you know, they've had a lifetime of habits, they look around and they see that their downward trajectory of health is, quote, normal, and they think, you know, well, it's too late to change or they're resigned. Do you have any impact on folks like that?
You know, the other day I had lunch with Anna Negron, who I know that you know, Dr. Anna Negron, who is just delightful. Mm-hmm. And she said to me, well, what are you going to do when you grow up? Because I think that that's something that we all think about in terms of, you know, being productive citizens. And I said, well, my real goal is that when I stop working, I see myself being an interventionist for senior citizens, baby boomers who will be senior citizens, and saying to them, meet me at the grocery store, let me take you on a tour, let's go to your house and let me show you how to make one easy meal that doesn't have any oil, salt, or sugar in it. So I do have a lot of young people who will give me their mother's phone numbers, and I will call them up out of the blue and say, hey, you don't know who I am, but your daughter gave me your phone number, And I tell them who I am and that I will meet them wherever they want to go, to a grocery store, and take them on a tour. And I've done that a couple of times, and that's always kind of fun. So I think that that's a good thing. And maybe that will kind of have a snowball effect and blossom into something bigger. I also do health coaching at Real Food Works. And they have a weight loss program, so I'm able to address the joys of eating a plant-based whole foods diet. And as one of my clients said to me last week, he goes, "Oh, wow, you sound like you're an expert." So, of course, I kind of chortle to myself because I don't think I'm an expert, but I certainly live first-handedly, you know, understanding those pillars and how they really can have a positive impact on your well-being.
Mm-hmm. Great. Well, that sounds, you know, it sounds like younger people are more open to the message that they're the ones sending you to their parents.
Don't you think that's sweet? I'm always sort of just, I feel a warm embrace around my heart when that happens, that it shows me how much a young person cares for their parents and how they look at me as what anybody can become in terms of just being healthier, you know?
Right.
So I think that that's a good thing. I think that's good.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, most of us grew up, many of us grew up with parents who cared deeply about us, and one of those arenas where they cared deeply was around food, and they were, you know, telling us when we were little, you've got to eat this to be big and strong, and they may have been misinformed, but, you know, a lot of the time the love comes through. And so
yep.
It's nice to, you know, to be in a new world with all sorts of, you know, new understandings and discoveries and be able to pay it back a little bit as well as paying it forward.
Yeah, I think, Howard, the other thing that just popped into my head is that, I don't know if you know this or not, but the Giant grocery stores, and I know that they're in Pennsylvania and beyond, but they have registered dietitians on staff. And you just have to go to customer service and say, "I want to make an appointment with the registered dietitian," and it's free. And that the registered dietitian will work with you. Now, she may or he may not follow a whole foods plant-based diet. But I think that that says a lot about that grocery store as well, that food is becoming medicine.
Mm-hmm.
Don't you think?
Yeah. Well, we're starting to understand that we're walking around with, they're either scalpels or daggers, that we're either healing ourselves or, you know, that food is way more powerful than the casual and recreational way we've been treating it.
Well, you know, the other thing I recommend to every person that I coach at Real Food Works is to get forks over knives, and I suggest not to watch it all at once, but to watch it for 10 minutes a day, and then that way get through the entire 90 minutes. And I would say that 9 times out of 10, people come back to me and say, "Oh, my God, I understand what you're talking about," or "That movie really makes sense to me." And I think I may have shared with you that I saw Forks Over Knives when it was in a director's cut. I saw it at the Rip Esselstyn Engine 2 immersion in Austin, and the movie spoke to me so much that at the immersion you could go to African dance one night and you could go to folk singing or you could watch this movie, and I watched the movie every night for a week because it was just so powerful. And it was the first time that I had ever heard that food could be medicine, and it just hit a really powerful chord with me. So I think that movie single-handedly is responsible for getting people to look at the way they look at food. And one quick story, a colleague was at a convenience store getting an all-vegetable hoagie made on a whole wheat roll, and the clerk behind the counter said, "Did you ever hear of a movie called Forks Over Knives?"
Yeah.
"My family and I watched this movie, and the five of us gave up meat and gave up this and that and cold cuts, and my mom doesn't take high blood pressure medication anymore." So that movie has a very, very powerful current for anybody who wants to change their lifestyle and embrace a healthier way of being. It's not just about the weight loss, Howard. I think it's about, you know, your biometrics and your attitude and your clarity and thinking and the way that good food has an impact on your emotional well-being as well. So I think that you know, the cascade of it is just really, really never ending in a good way.
Right. Well, you know, we talk a lot about holism and being whole. And it's inevitable that if we see food as separate from everything else, the effects of what we eat are going to leak unseen. And if we embrace food as the principal way that we interact with the world, this is how the world goes in and out. And, you know, on not even on a spiritual level, just on a physical level, this is how we are one with everything. Being mindful. You know, and I don't even tell people like what to eat anymore. If someone comes to me and they ask, I'll mention, you know, that the whole food plant-based diet is scientifically backed up and it's worked very well for me and many, many people. But I don't try to convince people of a particular way of eating over another. I just tell people to start bringing awareness to what they eat instead of whatever it is in the car. Or just sort of mindlessly to really start thinking about food and when you're actually eating it to pay attention to it. And mm-hmm. I find that from there, that's kind of the key change, that from there, everything else flows from their own body sense and intuition. And that's much more powerful than even hearing an expert talk about what you should be eating.
I think that you're right. And I think the other pivotal point here is that many, many Americans, myself included, were either on or off a diet. Like, I would often joke with my friends and say that I had a black belt in dieting because I could lose an enormous amount of weight in a short time, especially when I was younger, and then surrender that new crazy way of what eating. So I don't consider this a diet, but I consider it to be my life practice and how I approach food. And relinquishing myself of the pressure of having the word diet in my life has been one of the most freeing feelings that I have ever had in my life. And I think that that's probably one of the real nuggets on this whole journey.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, no, it doesn't. It certainly doesn't feel like a diet. I don't feel like I have that much brain power to spare. Like, I know people who are on diets. It's like, I'm in awe of how many cycles of RAM they're running every day to, first of all, figure out what to eat, and second of all, convince themselves that they want to eat it, and third of all, record it. I'm like, wow, you got to be a lot smarter than I am to be able to do that. I just keep it simple for me so I can spend my brain on harder things, on more important things.
Mm-hmm. I think that you're absolutely right. I think you're right. And, you know, just one other interesting thing, and I haven't worked at Whole Foods for a year and a half, but since the inception of the Health Starts Here program and Engine 2 and other things of the same ilk, kale sales are through the roof.
Yeah.
You know, 5 years ago, kale was the garnish on the diet platter at Friendly's. And now kale has become the mainstay of a delicious meal. And I don't know if you've noticed this, but the price of kale has also gone up. It used to be like, please buy me at this cheap price. And now it's becoming, you know, a little bit more expensive. So maybe kale has something to do with the way that we're all responding.
Right. Well, you should come down to the South where the word hasn't exactly spread that it's a health food. You know, kale and collards, you can still get cheap in giant bags because it's traditional Southern food.
That's true. Yeah, you're right about that. That's another interesting good point. So,
and it grows in the garden in the winter, so it's pretty hardy stuff. So we can still get our kale even if it goes boutique.
Well, we had some kale in our garden this year, and It seems to live through every element of weather. So I'm guessing, I like to think that the strength of kale in the garden, has a direct correlation to its strength and effect in your body and everything that it's, supposed to do to make you healthier and with all those phytonutrients and everything else that are blooming around. So, but
right.
You should always eat kale. It's never too late to eat kale. It's never too late to embrace kale as a food and not just a garnish. So I think keeping an open mind and, you know, my generation, the baby boomers, we love trends and I still keep in touch with my high school president. He saw Forks Over Knives. He's lost 35 pounds. He switched from a standard American diet to following a plant-based whole foods diet and said he's never felt better. So, again, let's hope that other generations embrace this, not to see it as a trend, but as a practice and a focus on your life, not just the diet, as we spoke a few minutes ago.
Right. Yep. It's the kindest thing you can do for yourself, for your loved ones, for the planet. We're interested in individual longevity for ourselves and our loved ones. Sometimes I also think about, like, the longevity of our species. Like, how long can we continue to mistreat the planet and hope to have it be hospitable? And so, you know, whatever our food choices, if they're not creating a more biodiverse world with you know, more biomass and a richer diversity of ecosystem, you know, it may be too slow for us to see it in our lifetime, but it's certainly, you know, not a good direction. So I would encourage everyone to think about contributing to a human civilization that improves the planet and doesn't just destroy it. And one of the probably the biggest way to do that is through food.
I think you're right about that too. I think that you're absolutely right. I think that it's kind of like a domino effect that starts with one little thing. And then I know for myself that when I first began on my journey, it was just about switching what I ate. But now I look at things like animal rights, and I look about it makes me focus more on the environment. And it has had a whole cascading effect with the way that I just sort of lead and focus my own life. And I'll be very frank with you. 5 years ago, I used to make fun of vegans. You know, I would always have some little quippy joke about them or something like that. And I would make fun of people who did yoga. And now I do yoga and I eat plants every day of my life. So
you should make fun of millionaires.
Howard, that's the most brilliant thing you've ever said. I'm starting today. And it won't include Donald Trump.
Millionaires with good hair.
It's interesting, just on a sidebar, Jay-Z and Beyonce, you know, they did a 28-day challenge for themselves and apparently lost a lot of weight, and they have a vegan chef. It would be interesting to see what kind of impact those 28 days had on them. Or there's a TV show called The Talk, and one of the hosts, her name is Cheryl Underwood, she's doing a 28-day vegan challenge right now. So it will be interesting to see what happens after the 28th day, because I will tell you that when I did my first 28-day challenge, I used to keep a list of what my foods would be like on day 29. But then when I hit that magical day 10 of feeling so terrific, I just kind of threw the list away and never looked back. So I'm hoping that that's the experience for anybody who, even in a test pattern of living a vegan lifestyle, maybe they can, you know, find a new embrace for themselves or whatever. So,
right.
Anyway.
And I still make fun of vegans. So,
I think that maybe what we really need to do is make fun of millionaire vegans. So this way you'll sustain your plant-based self, and then that windfall of cash will find itself into your world.
Right. I'm starting with James Cameron.
Oh, that's a good one, actually. Yeah, that's actually a very good one. And I understand that he's doing really positive things with all of that.
Yeah. Apparently he's determined that global climate destabilization is real. It's a big deal. And we have very little time. So he's putting, I think, all of his energy and brilliance and resources to bear on a really worthwhile project.
Yeah, I think I've heard some ramblings of that with some of the big guns in the plant-based world. So I think that that's a good thing, don't you think?
Yep. Well, I think I don't have a lot of experience with alternatives, but I really like this planet.
Mm-hmm.
And I think
I agree.
I think we should take care of it. You know, call me a hippie radical, but that's how I feel, and I'm going to stick by that.
Hippie radicals. Yeah. Hippie free radicals is what you should really think that would be good.
I should be a hippie antioxidant instead.
That might work as well. I think that's probably a phrase that has never been coined, so that might be something that you might want to actually think about. So no matter how old you are, Howard, you can be a hippie-free antioxidant.
As you will say, it's never too late.
It's never too late, and obviously somebody is still feeding me and needing me when I'm 64.
Right on. All right, Char Nolan, thank you so much for taking the time to share your story and be so clear and inspiring with us today.
Howard, you're very kind, and I want to just let you know that I have a couple of books on my nightstand, and one of them is Whole, and I read a couple of pages of it and go, you know, nod my head and think about it or circle a word that I don't understand, but you did a great job on that book, and I wanted to let everybody know that I'm a fan of yours.
Oh, well, thank you. Well, reading it is great, but more important is that everybody buy it. Did I say that?
Buy it and live it.
Buy it and live it. Share it.
It's okay. Presents, you know, if you need any presents for anyone in your life, just head over to your favorite, you know, book monger and get that copy of the book. And I'm happy to say, Howard, that I have an autographed copy, so that makes my copy even more valuable. So, anyway.
Right on. Well, thank you for that. And be well, stay warm and heated and electrified up in miserable Philly today.
Thank you.
And I look forward to seeing you at some happy plant event someday soon.
And I think we'll make that happen. There's going to be the first ever Vegetarian Fest in Philadelphia, sponsored by the Humane League, on June the 14th, and I'm on the planning committee, so I'll keep you in the loop and shoot you some emails. Maybe you'll be able to come up to Philly and be part of that event.
That would be awesome. June 14th, right. You say?
June 14th, yeah.
Yeah. No, I have a guitar lesson on the 16th. That's it. Oh, it's, okay, it's Father's Day weekend. So maybe I'll get a vegan grilling book out of it.
There you go. All right, Howard. Take good care. Always my pleasure. Thank you so much.
Mine too. Thanks, Char.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Let's take this home with some gratitudes. First of all, thanks to Mama Earth. You have been so very, very good to me. Second, Will Ridenour donated the use of his beautiful song Sabali Dong as the theme music for this show. You can find out more about Will's music at willridenour.com. Third, thanks to all the patrons of the Plant Yourself podcast for your financial support. You can read the names of all the patrons at any show notes at plantyourself.com. If you would like to become a patron to show your gratitude for the work I'm doing and help support it, you can do so at plantyourself.com/gift. That's G-I-F-T, all lowercase. And finally, I want to thank you, the listener, for making all of this possible, for giving me a reason to reach out to people, to have conversations, to edit, produce, publicize, all the stuff that I do is for you, so that we can continue to have conversations and continue to ripple out healing and transformation into the world.